Hi everyone, Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. For today's conversation, we will focus in on U.S. equity sectors, specifically the financials, as the sector was recently upgraded by the UBS Chief Investment Office to Most Preferred. Joining me here to talk about U.S. financials is financials analyst for the Americas with UBS CIO Brad Ball. So with that, Brad, thank you for dropping by Top of the Morning today. Looking forward to our conversation.
Well, thank you, Dan. I'm glad to be here.
So, Brad, to set the stage, as I mentioned, the UBS Chief Investment Office recently upgraded the U.S. financial sector to Most Preferred. So, can you walk us through the thinking and investment thesis behind that shift?
Sure. Yes. So, we did upgrade U.S. financials from neutral to Most Preferred. Really because the three main risks that we had been watching for that had been flashing sort of red-yellow at the end of last year and the beginning of this year have begun to turn more sort of yellow-green, starting to become more of a tailwind than a headwind. And those three main risks are rate risk. We were concerned about higher-for-longer market interest rates and the potential negative impact that could have on both funding costs across U.S. financials, but also pressure on the economy, broadly speaking, and implications that that could have for credit risk. And that's the second big risk that we were focused on. Definitely some concerns about what's going on in commercial real estate. Those concerns still exist, but are softened to some extent with the outlook for the economy now. And concerns a little bit about the consumer because we have seen a pickup in the unemployment rate. And then the third risk that we've been focused on is regulatory risk with the upcoming election, concerns about the regulatory pendulum swinging against the financial services industry over the last 3.5 years, and what would be the future of financial services regulation? What would be the implications for compliance costs and capital costs going forward? As I say, it feels like those risks are really more flashing sort of yellow-green at this point. I would actually characterize the environment that we're in as more attractive from a risk-return standpoint. We actually see improving net interest income on the horizon. We see some rebound in fee income categories. We see a peaking in credit losses. And we see a stabilization in regulatory and compliance risks. I think you could characterize our view along three R's as we talk about it. The three R's are rates, regulation, and return on capital. So first, with respect to rates, I mentioned that rates were a concern, the higher for longer. When was the Fed likely to start cutting interest rates? Well, we now have a 50 basis point cut from the Fed and indications from the Fed that they will cut another roughly 150 basis points, potentially by the midpoint of next year. So that combined 200 basis points of Fed rate cuts could help, broadly speaking, for U.S. financials by lowering funding costs. You could see a pickup in loan growth. You could see it further support capital markets activity. You could see a peaking in credit losses. So let me talk about each of those individually. The funding cost point, generally speaking, deposit costs have risen along with rising interest rates over the past 2 years. What we would expect with interest rates coming down now is to get banks cutting their deposit rates and actually getting some relief on overall funding costs. We've already seen a stabilization in deposit trends where a shift out of non-interest-bearing into interest-bearing accounts has slowed dramatically, and overall deposit levels have stabilized. And our expectation is that as we go into 25 and ultimately 26, deposit costs will come down. Banks continue to have sufficient deposits to cover their outlook for loans. The loan-deposit ratio is below 100% for the banking industry broadly, and that's a good sign for the outlook for net interest margins and net interest income as we get into the next year and a half to 2 years. Net interest income is an important focus because it's the primary source of revenues for banks. It represents about 2/3 of total revenues for a bank. As I mentioned, loan growth. We haven't seen a lot of loan growth so far this year. It's been relatively weak, and I think it's because most commercial borrowers have been on the sidelines waiting for interest rate cuts that a lot of people had expected, and also due to some uncertainty about the macro outlook. At this point, most people, I think, view the economy as likely to achieve a soft landing. And as I said, the Fed rate cuts are in front of us, and commercial borrowers are likely to start drawing on their lines, start using their credit facilities more. That means an increase in loan growth. So if you combine increased loan growth with declining deposit costs, like I say, that is a positive for net interest income, the outlook for NII as we go into the next year and a half to 2 years. Finally, I mentioned capital markets activity. There have been a lot of transactions that have been waiting, I think, for not just rate cuts, but a clearer view of what the economic outlook will be. And we do expect to see somewhat of an uncoiling of the spring of capital markets activity in the next year and a half to 2 years as well. So capital markets, which is a key contributor to fee income for the biggest banks, could be a storyline that we'll be supporting and following going forward. Now, I did mention credit costs, and credit costs have been rising. They've been normalizing to some extent. We expect that to level off, probably not come down anytime soon, but a leveling off of credit costs will be an important factor in the earnings growth and profitability outlook for the sector. Just quickly, second, talking about the second R, the first R being rates, the second R being regulations. We have already seen some softening in the regulatory tone here, coming up on the election. In particular, the regulatory agencies proposed a new capital guideline about a year ago. And after a lot of conversation with the industry, a lot of feedback from participants, they've started to soften that guideline, and it looks like the capital charge will ultimately be less than had been previously expected. I also want to highlight that coming into the election, if the election were to go toward the Republican, if Trump were to win, you would expect a lot of the policies that he applied last time he was president would come back into the fore. That could mean a less heavy regulatory burden for the industry, and it could potentially mean an increase in capital return by the industry, that is share repurchases, as well as an increase in M&A in the industry. And that just shifts us to the third item, which is return on capital. The banking industry has significant excess capital. They got through the stress test that is done every year. The results came out last June, and every one of the 30-plus banks that was in the stress test passed the stress test. They carry excess capital. And in a somewhat lighter touch regulatory environment, you could expect to see increased return on capital, like I said, through share buybacks and perhaps through dividend increases as well. So you combine all of those things, rates, regulation, return on capital. In our view, the risk-return dynamic looks attractive for financials, and that's really what was behind our upgrade from neutral to most preferred. We think the outlook is solid over the intermediate to long term.
Okay, so now that we have a better understanding of the investment thesis, maybe we can talk about positioning within the sector. So again, broadly speaking, CIO maintains a most preferred view of U.S. financials. Though as we get a bit more granular, Brad, what do you currently like the most from a subsector standpoint?
Yeah, so our most preferred view is on the banks. That's the sector, the subsector within U.S. financials that has I think been under the most pressure due to the risks that I mentioned earlier. Again, concerns about rates, credit, and regulation. Those applied really directly to the banks and have dampened the bank's performance in recent years. They've had negative implications for banks' earnings growth and profitability. And I do believe that the setup is good for earnings growth and profitability to improve. As they say, over the intermediate to long term. We recently attended a industry conference where all of the major banking institutions presented, and I wanted to highlight some of the takeaways there. First of all, the bank managements that presented were consistently upbeat about the prospects of an improving backdrop, especially in the context of a soft landing next year and into 26. Now, that optimism, I think, reflects expectations that they will have some relief on the deposit cost side, as I mentioned earlier. It also reflects the expectation that commercial borrowers will increasingly draw on their credit lines when we get better visibility about the outlook for the economy. A lot of optimism about the U.S. consumer. U.S. households have been really very strong since the pandemic. Households received a fair amount of cash in the form of a bailout during the pandemic, and they continue to carry more cash than average. Borrowing levels on credit cards have been increasing since the end of the pandemic, but they're still not at the hefty levels that they had been at pre-pandemic. It gives you the impression that consumers are not increasingly using their credit cards to sustain their standard of living. The job market, while we have seen an uptick in unemployment, remains strong. People can afford to live the lifestyles that they're living right now. And so the U.S. consumer looks relatively healthy. I'll also point out that the banks are very focused on achieving positive operating leverage going forward. They have been feeling a little bit of pressure on the revenue side of the operating leverage equation. The expectation is that revenues will pick up and they'll control expense growth. So operating leverage is achieved by revenue growth outpacing expense growth into the next 12 to 18 months. So you'll actually see revenue growth outpacing expense growth, boosting underlying earnings and therefore boosting overall profitability. And then just finally, with respect to credit asset quality, we have been seeing normalizing trends. We saw a bottoming of loss rates during the pandemic. We've seen an increase in loss rates since the pandemic, as was expected, normalizing back to pre-pandemic levels. Now that we're at close to those levels, the expectation is that you'll see a leveling off of credit losses, and that will be a positive driver of earnings growth as well as we get into the next couple of years. Finally, all of the managements that presented were very positive about the prospects of increasing share repurchases. They feel like they have sufficient capital to operate their businesses and even excess capital available to do buybacks. So all of those takeaways from the investor presentations that I attended recently supported the thesis that I had just laid out for you, that in fact things have turned from being somewhat of a risky, uncertain environment to being somewhat clearer prospects for future growth. Now, the one thing I will note is that there could be some pressure over the near term on the outlook for net interest income growth. That is something that management's brought up at this conference, but it's something that I think will be overwhelmed over the longer term by the positive trends of lower deposit costs.
Running with that a bit further in the way of risks, headwinds to the group, what should investors be mindful of?
Yeah, so I was just sort of getting to that actually, Dan, with the last part of the last answer, and that is over the near term, it's possible that you could see pressure on net interest income really arising from the different pace at which rate it changes impact asset yields versus funding costs. So generally speaking, the banks are asset sensitive. That means they have more assets to reprice in the short term than liabilities. So generally speaking, a cut in interest rates like we just experienced, the 50 basis point Fed funds rate cut, are going to be directly impacted on asset yields. While they may have a lagging effect on deposit pricing, eventually that catches up, and that's part of our bull thesis. Again, we think deposit costs will go down, but the pace at which asset yields go down may be faster than the pace of deposit cuts, which could put some near-term pressure on net interest margins. So I would say the first risk that we watch out for is the risk that over the next quarter or two, you could still see a little bit more pressure on net interest margins and net interest income. But I think that could reflect a inflection point for the sector. I think investors will absorb that. It's actually expected in most analyst estimates and models for 2024 and early 2025. And I think we can take that in stride with the outlook improving, as I keep highlighting. The other big area of risk that I would highlight, Dan, is one that we have been very focused on for a couple of years now, and that is commercial real estate. CRE has been in focus to the extent that the banks have really tightened their lending standards and have been working hard to try to restructure loans that have been most under stress, in particular the office properties, urban office properties have been a stress point. You know, the good news is we've been working at it for a couple of years and trying to restructure these loans. And also, they're relatively small as a proportion of total loans and total assets for the largest banks. If you look at the biggest banks, they have maybe sort of 1 to 2% of their loan book is in office properties, very small. Even for the regional banks, it's not much more than 4 to 5% of their loans. So it's a manageable amount, and it's something that we've been focusing on for a couple of years, but we do think it will continue to be an overhang. It's a risk that we watch carefully. And then just finally, the third risk, I mentioned earlier, the strength of the U.S. consumer, but we're always watching the U.S. consumer carefully. There have been some stress points visible in the low-end consumer, subprime borrowers, people that are relatively low income, are finding a little harder to make ends meet and to meet their debt service obligations. However, most of the banks and finance companies that we follow don't have significant exposure to that low-end consumer, and it's not expected that those pressures are going to spread up to the prime or super prime segments of the consumer population.
Okay, now thematically speaking, Brad, as it relates to U.S. financials, what's currently on your radar in the way of themes?
Yeah, I would highlight two themes, Dan, that we're focused on. One is capital markets rebound, something we've been seeing already take shape this year. And the second is industry consolidation. So the capital markets rebound, I mentioned earlier that several of the managements at the recent conference I attended were optimistic about the outlook for capital markets. We're seeing very strong pipelines of activity. After a couple of years of lower than average total capital markets activity, you're seeing the pipelines grow and expectations that you could see a release of more capital markets for the same kind of reasons that we've been talking about. So people that are set up to potentially do an initial public offering or mergers and acquisitions have been waiting for the rate cuts, which we just got, or waiting for a clearer view for a soft landing and a potentially improving economy, waiting for any visibility around the beginning of the next economic cycle. And it seems like we're getting closer to that point. We also could be waiting to some extent for the results of the upcoming presidential election here in the U.S. And that leads to industry consolidation. You know, we've talked about this before, Dan. There's over 4,300 banks chartered banks in the United States. There's excess capacity in the banking system. I believe there's a need for consolidation to achieve scale economies, but also to achieve the necessary scale to make the investments to keep up with changing technology, which, you know, I think technology, you talk about AI and other forms of tech as being key focus in a lot of different sectors, is certainly key within the banking sector to both increase productivity and efficiency, but also to increase what the sector does, the financial services sector does on behalf of its clients, both consumers and commercial borrowers as intermediators of credit. So consolidation of the industry, I think, would be helpful in achieving the necessary scale to make the kinds of investments that are necessary to keep pace with the changes in technology. If you look at those two things, the capital markets rebound and the idea of consolidation, both of those themes have the potential to be positive in our investment thesis over the course of the next year. So, you know, I'm not relying on those in our positive view. I don't think it's, you know, necessary that they drive our positive view for the sector, but they would be added tailwinds to boost our most preferred view overall.
Brad, very productive conversation as always. Thank you for dropping by to walk our listeners and clients through CIO's current thinking when it comes to the U.S. financials.
Well, thank you, Dan. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Brad. Again, today we have been joined by Brad Ball, financials analyst for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. I do want to point our listeners and clients to Brad's latest U.S. financials equity preference list, which was updated back on August 27th. That publication can now be located up on UBS.com/CIO. Though for clients of UBS, simply reach out to your UBS financial advisor if you would like to receive a copy of the report directly. From UBS Studios, I'm Dan Cassidy. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit UBS.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit UBS.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investor investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.